I experience my call to ministry as a call to creativity, a call to life. That creative identity is central to my faith, but it isn't really a way of thinking about myself so much as an orientation toward life, an aspiration. This is the kind of preamble that usually hits the cutting room floor when I edit my drafts, but I tell you this because my ongoing ministerial formation is intimately tied to my ministry to and with South Church. It feels important to include you in this time of reflection and change in my ministry, because I ministry to you and also with you, and I want this time of change to be a time that we undertake together. The artist sees with different eyes. The artist creates from what someone might consider garbage and then calls a new thing into being. An artist must have a healthy relationship with risk and vulnerability, a capacity to wonder, an ability to accept the unexpected and be altered by it, and a willingness to let go. Often, art is grounded in play, in humor, in adventure, in journeys of discovery. I aspire to all these things on my own behalf and on behalf of this congregation in the world. In the creative outlook, there is a deep allegiance to life. There's access to a wholeness that can transcend even the most painful situations and sometimes transform them. It's a radical thing to live whole, alive, and free in a world that conspires continuously to reduce us to commodities. Years ago, I wrote a sermon called Whole Unbroken. It's among my favorite sermons because its core message expresses a jewel at the heart of my religious experience. I share again the words of June Jordan's essay, The Difficult Miracle of Black Poetry in America. It's about Phyllis Wheatley, the first published African-American poet, and it takes up the question raised by the psalmist over two millennia ago. The wicked have carried us away to captivity and require of us a song. How can we sing our holy song in a strange land? The essay begins, it was not natural, and she was the first. Come from a country of many tongues, torn by rupture, by theft, by travel like mismatched clothing, packed down into the cargo of evil ships sailing irreversible into slavery. Come to a country to be docile and dumb, to be big and breeding, to be turkey, horse, cow, to be cook, carpenter, plow, to be 5'6", 140 pounds, in good conditioning, and answering to the name of Tom or Mary. To be bed bait. To be legally spread legs for rape by the master's son, the master's overseer, the master's visiting nephew. To be nothing human, nothing family, nothing from nowhere, nothing that screams, nothing that weeps, nothing that dreams, nothing that keeps anyone, anything deep in your heart. To live forcibly illiterate, forcibly itinerant. To live eyes lowered, head bowed, to be worked without rest, to be worked without pay, to be worked without thanks, to be worked day up to nightfall, to be three-fifths of a human at best. To be this valuable, this hated thing among strangers who purchased your life and then cursed it unceasingly, to be a slave. To be a slave. Come to this country to be a slave, and how should you sing? What should you know of a lyrical life? How could you, belonging to no one but property to those despising the smiles of your soul, how could you dare to create yourself? A poet. June Jordan. The girl who would become Phyllis Wheatley was brought to the U.S. from the shores of Africa and put up for auction at the tender age of 7. She was purchased by Susanna and John Wheatley, and her first poem, which she wrote at the age of 14, was published in 1768. Phyllis was dropped as a child into a social structure systematically designed to annihilate black personhood. stripped of her name, her family, her language, and so much more, and yet she emerged an artist. This is the great and difficult miracle of her existence. Jordan goes on to ask, how should there be black poets in America? It was not natural, and she was the first. I met another Phyllis Wheatley during my chaplaincy internship in 2005. I did my clinical pastoral education at the Veterans Administration Hospital in San Francisco. One day, I stopped into the room of a vet. He was a black man, an addict, homeless, and quite sick. He spoke about the terrible things he had done in his life. He spoke about his misdeeds with a kind of amazement and a horror at what he'd become. But I remember there was one low to which he had never stooped, no matter how desperate he was. I remember how passionately he wanted me to know, I never did that thing. I never did it. I never would. I listened. We were quiet for a while. And then I said, does that mean that there's a part of you that's still uncorrupted by addiction? And his body softened. And his face opened, and he looked at me, and he smiled a little, and he said, I guess so, yeah. He told me he used to sing in church, and I asked him to sing something for me. He was tiny in the hospital bed, ravaged, but he propped himself up on his pillows, and he began to sing. His voice was unbelievable. It was pure and it was clear, and he chose one of my favorites, His Eyes on the Sparrow, the one that goes, forgive me. I sing because I'm happy. I sing because I'm free. His eye is on the sparrow and I know he watches me. It was breathtaking. In my memory, the room is still around that holy moment. It was an encounter with God for me. There is a wholeness and freedom singing at the heart of everything, which is available to us every moment to tap into, even in the most unsettled or despairing times. Zen Master Sung San, an influential Zen teacher, the teacher of the school in Zen in which I practice, used to say, your true self is always shining and free. When the world feels broken, or I do, this fierce freedom is my solace and my challenge. It reminds me of my own humanity, and it calls me out into the world. Writer Wendell Berry says, to be creative is to have health. To keep oneself fully alive in the creation, to keep the creation fully alive in oneself, to see the creation anew, to welcome one's part in it anew. The most creative works are all strategies of this health. All of this matters so much now. Society is fractured. So much is broken. So much has been lost. We lick our wounds. We count our losses. Damage has been done to people and communities and institutions. There is a constant fog of shock and anxiety. The first thing we can do, the most profound thing, is to orient ourselves toward life. There is a choice at the heart of our existence, the choice to orient toward life or death, and we can choose life. We can begin by choosing to be healthy and alive, and so much flows from that. Wendell Berry writes about many things, including poets and poetry. He wrote an essay about a poem by Hayden Carruth about the Vietnam War. It's one of my favorite poems, and it's called On Being Asked to Write a Poem Against the War in Vietnam. Well, I have, and in fact, more than one, and I'll tell you this, too. I wrote one against Algeria, that nightmare, and another against Korea, and another against the one I was in. And I don't remember how many against the three when I was a boy, Abyssinia, Spain, and Harlan County. And not one breath was restored to one shattered throat, man's, woman's, or child. Not one, not one. But death went on and on, never looking aside. except now and then like a child with a furtive half smile to make sure I was noticing. The poem is a lament, an accounting of devastation, but it is not passive. There is defeat in the poem, but also a healthy defiance. Wendell Berry explores the meaning of Carruth's poem in an essay called A Poem of Difficult Hope, and he says, "Most protest is naive. It expects quick, visible improvements and despairs and gives up when such improvements do not come. Protest that endures is moved by a hope far more modest than that of public success, namely, the hope of preserving qualities in one's own heart and spirit that would be destroyed by acquiescence. Most protest is naive. It expects quick, visible improvements and despairs and gives up when such improvements do not come. Protest that endures is moved by a hope far more modest than that of public success, namely, the hope of preserving qualities in one's own heart and spirit that would be destroyed by acquiescence." These ideas are an antidote to burnout and apathy in a challenging time. There is a way of approaching the challenges of a historical moment that enlivens the spirit and restores our souls to wholeness. We often, though, act as though we have to choose between concern for ourselves and concern for the world. But there is a spiritual path that cuts right through that false choice. It is the choice to be oriented toward creation, health, and aliveness. That doesn't stop suffering from continuing to exist, from continuing to be a part of life. It always will be. But it cuts through suffering's capacity to define us, and it allows us to carry on. I heard an interview with Walter Brueggemann, the author of a classic theological text called The Prophetic Imagination. Brueggemann is the foremost living scholar of the biblical prophetic texts, Isaiah and Jeremiah, the Psalms, the Book of Lamentations. The prophets were difficult men who foretold doom for societies that did not change their ways. I don't know about you, but I felt a twinge of discomfort when Dave sang his song, and that is the spirit of the prophets. I think it's beautiful that you chose what you chose. I didn't know what you would choose. The prophets were not pleasant, but their purpose was to call society back from a path of destruction. Brueggemann believes that in order to understand these texts, it's necessary to approach them as poetry. The prophets, in his view, are poets who use disarming language to translate between the world as it is and the world as it could be. When asked to share his favorite passages, he selects two. The first is from Jeremiah 4, and it is an unflinching account of loss. "I looked on the earth, and lo, it was waste and void. And to the heavens, and they had no light. I looked on the mountains, and lo, they were quaking, and all the hills moved to and fro. I looked, and lo, there was no one at all, and all the birds of the air had fled. I looked, and lo, the fruitful land was a desert, and all its cities were laid in ruins before the Lord, before his fierce anger." The text communicates the way it feels when everything in our life seems to have been laid to waste. I think we all go through periods like that sometimes. I remember feeling that, the expansiveness of that, after Sandy Hook and at other times. His second selection was from Isaiah. "Do not remember the former things or consider the things of old. I am about to do a new thing. Now it springs forth. Do you not perceive it?" Text is a call to presence, a call to just now aliveness in the miracle of creation. There is hope in both these texts, a reminder that we need not be afraid to face what has been broken or damaged, because always also there is rebirth. Brueggemann himself is a preacher with a prophetic voice. He's funny and playful, but unflinching in his assessment of society. He says, "Preachers find it hard to talk about the fact that our society has chosen a path of death in which we have reduced everything to a commodity. We believe there are technical solutions to everything, So it doesn't matter whether you talk about the over-reliance on technology, the mad pursuit of commodity goods, our passion for violence now experienced as war policies. All of these are interrelated to each other, and none of us, very few of us, want to have that explored as an inadequate and dehumanizing way to live. This is the root of my aspiration for all of us. We can be a creative community oriented toward life, wholeness, and freedom, fierce in refusing to acquiesce to a society that would reduce us and our communities to commodities. This is the spiritual work at the heart of our charge to ministry within our church, our community, our nation, and our world. Prophetic imagination. We are called to be artists, all of us, whole, alive, and free. Keep yourself fully alive in the creation. Keep the creation fully alive in yourself. The most creative works we undertake together will be strategies of this health. May it be so. Amen.